each meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from a little cave on a tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened and a vision was revealed. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing in the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us, to some degree, it has always been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let us now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, and author of A Mother's Plea for the Winds Have Changed. Together, we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Winds of Change on this. What's today?
Today is really Friday.
Today is
really what I was going to ask.
Yay.
So I feel like TGIF, everyone. Hey.
Nick, you're in a good mood today.
He got his paycheck.
I'm in a good mood for a lot of reasons.
What's that?
I got it.
Well, no, I'm in a good mood for a lot of reasons.
Good.
One is that, you know, got to pay today, which is always good.
It
I'm
going
to see my girlfriend later, and we're going to Bristol Renaissance Fair over there.
Oh, that sounds nice.
So we're very excited about that.
Whatever that is. What is that?
I'm trying to describe it. It's like a craft show and a fair, but what you do is it's medieval themed.
Oh, okay. Medieval.
I'm surprised you're the second person that's told me that they never heard of it.
It's in Wisconsin, isn't it?
Yeah, on the border between Wisconsin and Illinois.
Oh, you know it all. You got to just show everybody you know all of it.
Going dressed up because it's swashbuckling days.
So you dress up as medieval people?
Yeah, yeah.
People everybody's dressed up like that.
Sometimes see, Jerry, you wouldn't even have to dress up. You can just go.
Sometimes it's like going to comic conventions because some people dress up as that. But the main theme is, you know, it's medieval.
Yeah, how about that?
It's medieval.
And it's fun, and it's pretty cool.
You know, that brings me back to Assisi in France.
In France? Sure, Father.
It's Friday.
I didn't know they had Assisi in France.
Assisi in Italy. In Italy. It's because I've had a busy day already. I'm all over the place. Right. Been to the hospital, been to the school. We had the children's mass. I got the letter out to the parents,
yes,
the teachers.
I was
able to prepare for the radio. We'll see if I did sufficient preparation. And
I'm sure you did, Father.
It's just been one of those days. But anyway, so Assisi is in Italy. In Italy. But
thought it was in France.
It was in Italy. But I was there for they have every year in May during my sabbatical year. I went up there. I went there many times. It's only about 2 hours on the train. Beautiful, beautiful train ride to the mountains.
It is beautiful.
To Assisi, and then you get off the train, and I always walk then to the little town of Assisi. It's just it's beautiful.
I was even
thinking about it. And in May they have the poppy flowers.
Poppies. Oh, it's beautiful.
These beautiful red flowers are all over a sea of red flowers, all over the place, and. But they have in May. They have every year the upper part of Assisi, because it's on the mountain, right? It's on a hill. It's all those old medieval towns.
It looks like a kingdom
when you're
driving.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you have the upper part. It's much bigger than you think. You know, when you look at it from the train or from below, you get up there. It's much bigger, and it's a workout. You know, because if you walk, you're either walking straight up or straight down. Mm-hmm. You know. And so the upper part, they compete with the lower part, and they have the medieval, what do they call that? They do just different things that they do in the main square, activities with the swords and with the jousting all that stuff. Yeah, you know what the word. But everybody dresses in medieval costume. Now they have a mass to begin this whole thing, and this is a competition. It's a beautiful competition. But to begin the mass, it goes on for maybe 3 days, I think. But to begin this fiesta, this festive event, it all begins with a mass. And then there's somebody chosen as a king and the queen.
Oh, wow. Nice.
And so I happened to be there as they were leaving the church, and it was just like being in, because it is truly a medieval town.
It is.
It's not Disney World. This is
real.
It's real. And so they're coming out of the, they were coming out of the church, and it was fantastic. It was absolutely fantastic. And then the in the evening, I don't remember exactly what was going on in the, because I was staying in a place right above the Church of St. Francis of Assisi. There's this huge, this beautiful courtyard, and they had burning candles all over the place, and it was just beautiful.
Very mystical, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, very much. But you think about the clothes they wore in those days, you know, because they, you know, as they're dressed, especially the women.
The women with the dresses.
Yeah. So, anyway.
And then from there you went to France, right?
And then from there I went to France, yeah. Assisi in France. Where's Rome? Rome is in what country? In
Italy.
Italy.
Yes.
Italy. So anyway. Geez. How are you? Tony, how are you? Are you feeling better today?
Yes, yeah,
you were just so down, more down than you normally are.
Yeah. I'm doing a little better.
Yeah.
It's my weather. This is my weather.
This is your weather. That's right. It's a dark, dreary day.
Makes me feel good.
That's right. These dark, dreary days. Poor Tony. Anyway, the sun will come out tomorrow, I'm sure. It's not bad out there, so.
No, it's beautiful.
It's nice.
Kids were in the Mass. We had our first Mass, our opening Mass. It was very, very nice. It really was. You were there, Jeremy.
Yes,
Jeremy.
I liked it.
Yeah, so. Do you remember anything about it, that what the priest said? Anything that the
any,
priest said?
Any ex, no, not my.
The 2-7.
2-10-7.
2-10-7, you remember that?
I remembered that very much.
2-10-7.
And I told Christina about that.
2-10-7. I said, this is, I want you to remember, I'm going to mention this to them every week, 2-10-7. Because what we're trying to do is form leaders, you know, from the school. So there's the 7 habits of leadership. But I said, you've got to have your foundation, which is the 10 commandments. So, and the two is the 2 great commandments. Mm-hmm. Love the Lord your God with your mind, your body, your soul, your spirit. Love your neighbor as you love yourself. So that's the 2 commandments, right. 2 great. The 10, I want them by the end of the year to be able to speak about the 10 commandments as well as they can speak about the 7 learning habits. Mm-hmm. And then building off the foundation, which is the 10 commandments, the 2 great, the 10, the 2 is the summation of the 10. You build off that into the 7 habits of leadership. So we'll see. We'll see how they do. But they were good today. And I just got back. I was in the school now, and I had to see the Munchkins, you know, because they don't come to Mass yet. And went to the 3-year-old. It's amazing. 3-year-old. So they start. That was the lowest grader, the 3-year-olds. I don't even know what they call that. Tiny tots or something. I don't know. But they were the 3-year-olds. They didn't care that I was there. At all.
Like, who are you?
They were all doing their thing, the poor teacher. You know, she came from another Catholic school. She taught the kindergarten. Oh, and so now she's at the 3rd grader. I said, this must be a new for you. And she said, this is completely new for me.
Gosh.
It's amazing what a year makes, the difference in a year when you're that age. Because, you know, you see the 1st graders, and the 1st graders are, you know, the first, I was telling her, I said, you know, I was talking about how when the 1st graders first come, they, of course, they're just coming right out of kindergarten. Mm-hmm. Within a month, 4 weeks, a month, that's 4 weeks makes a month.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So within a month, they're complete. It's how they mature in 1 month in the 1st grade. For some reason, I've always noted that in the 1st grade. These 3-year-olds, they remain pretty consistent through the whole year. And
They're just keeping it real.
This is a 3-year-old and the pre-K and then the K and all that. And I was in the, but they were in their own, because they're having fun.
They're in their own world, isn't it?
They're having fun. Because some of them are dressed like policemen, some are dressed like firemen, and some are dressed like.
That's cute.
Then they've got the girls have their dolls. And they got African American dolls and Anglo dolls and Hispanic dolls. I think, you know, they were all different colors, you know, and they're just having a blast. It's really fun, you know.
Yeah.
But the poor teacher, she's good. She's very good. But I don't know how you can do it. Because if I ask them a question, I have to have the teacher has to interpret.
Interpret.
What language is he speaking? What language is she speaking? What language are they speaking? They all speak different languages.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And they're not English, Spanish, Italian. Mm-hmm. No, it's just whatever, their own language.
Yeah. It's the 3-year-old language.
The 3-year-old language. So I was in the.
Cute.
So afterwards, the kids were starting to come down for lunch, right? It was 11 o'clock. And I was in the cafe. Then I went from visiting the classrooms down to the cafeteria, and some of those students were already in the cafeteria. They had their little lunch is out, you know, and all that. And so one of the kids got up and he started talking to me. I had no idea what he said. I said, yes.
Yes.
Smiling. So I'm going to smile as well.
He's probably like, oh, he understands. He actually understands me. Nobody does.
It's amazing. If you ask the students a question, you know, you don't get the answer to the question you asked. They'll tell you whatever they want to tell you.
Yes.
And then once they tell you, then just to give you an example, somebody will say, so I'll say something like, well, what's tomorrow? Because, of course, today is the last day of the week, so mm-hmm. you're going to get a day off tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So what's tomorrow? So they don't know, of course. You think they're going to know that tomorrow's Saturday, but they don't know. Mm. I don't even know at that age if they even know they're going to get a day off, you know. I don't think it matters to them. Mm-mm. I'm talking about the three-year-olds. But even when you get into the kindergarten, you ask the students, okay, so what is tomorrow? And the teacher points, you know, to the she's already got her, you know,
the days of the week
and... So she'll say, tomorrow is Friday. No, tomorrow is Saturday. Yeah. Okay, so I asked the question, but then somebody raises a hand. So I said, okay, so I'm going to get the answer. And she says, well, you know, my uncle hurt his hand. Uh-huh. Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. Then everybody's going to tell me about... Who hurt? My grandmother is sick. My sister is, you know, it's just amazing.
Yes.
It's amazing. You know, I told you, I don't know if I probably mentioned this already.
Yes, you did.
I just got to tell it.
Yeah, you
have
to.
About that.
It's cute.
So we have Ash Wednesday, which mm-hmm. is the beginning of Lent. And so I was at the church. The kids come to the church and they receive the ashes on the forehead. You know, we put the imprint, the black ashes on the forehead, and then they go back to school. Well, the kindergartners, they're too young to come. So Sister Susan, this was when Sister was here, and the prince, when she said, could you just come over to the school afterwards? I said, I'll be happy. Yeah, absolutely. So I took the ashes. I'm in the vestments, the purple mm-hmm. vestments, you know. And I went to the school, and I went to the kindergartners, and I you know, said, you know, today is Ash Wednesday. I'm going to let you come one at a time. I'm going to put ashes on your forehead. And I explained a little bit of what it was. And then I knelt down because they're very tiny, you know, so they've got you, so they're I can
see
them.
At your level, yeah. Right.
So I don't have to bend down. So I knelt down, and the first student came up. And before I could put the ashes on the forehead, he said, you know, I was Spider-Man for Halloween. So this is March, you know, this is March. So I thought, well, then I realized, oh, because he thinks I'm dressed up for Halloween because I've got these vestments on and all this. Then the next, every student told me what they were for Halloween. So before they received the ashes, I was Cinderella for Halloween. I was Batman for Halloween. I was, whatever
the different,
are,
yeah.
You know? I was
characters.
Anyway, but they're really cute.
And Father, when you have the little ones come to church, the poor things, you really put the ashes on them. They're over the face.
Yeah,
and they're walking and they're like, it gets in their eyes. And they're like, they don't know what, and the other kids are pointing at them, laughing at them.
Exactly. They got to get serious. And when the first graders were not, they were at Mass, but I don't remember if they were at Mass or not, but when they first come to Mass, you know, in the years past, I don't know if they were there today. I don't remember. All the students were there, but I don't know if the first graders were there. When Sister was here, they would always come later. They would come after Christmas. That's when they would begin coming to Mass. We're talking about the first graders.
Yeah.
And I remember, knowing that they were there for the first time. So at the appropriate time, you know, everybody stood up, you know, at a certain part of Mass. And I said to the first graders, you guys stand up. You can stand up now. They were. they were standing
that's
up.
That's as high up as they
that's
went.
As high as, yeah.
Hey, Father, they still tell me that till this day.
What's
you
that?
Can stand up.
You can stand. Oh, they tell you. Yeah.
They tell me so.
Anyway, it's good having the children, the students back. So tell them, you know, who is, because we use, what do we begin with? What gospel would you begin with? Thinking of the gospels, and Geraldine was there, so she knows what gospel we use. But how would you begin? I choose a gospel that would be appropriate for the first day of the school Mass, when we have our first Mass. What would be an appropriate gospel if you had to choose, Tony, Christina?
Well, what do you think?
You always do that, Christina.
I'm always, when you bring the children to me,
Let the little children come. Okay, I could do that. But yeah. See, Jesus says, let the little children come to me. I think he's the little children. Mm-hmm. And you get the big kids. Now, see, they'll be very offended.
Oh, no.
So you get the seventh and eighth graders. You can't offend them because mm-hmm. they're the leaders of the school. Mm-hmm. So they don't want to be treated like little kids. Little children. So what I do is I use the gospel of the finding of Jesus in the temple. Because he's 12 years old.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it says very clearly he's 12 years old. And it's very beautiful, really, when you think about it. It's very appropriate. And I do it every year, so I didn't talk to the principal. And before the Mass, I said, you know, I've chosen a different gospel. She says, I know what gospel you're going to use. I would use it every year. So it's interesting to know if they remember or not. Mm-hmm. But she knows. She remembers. So Jesus is 12 years old. And it's very good because, you know, Mary and Joseph, they take him down. They observe the customs, you know. They're there for the Passover. And so they're obedient Jews, obedient, and then they're on their way back. They assumed Jesus was with the relatives, you know, because mm-hmm. they're as a clan, I guess, as a tribe. And at nighttime, when they begin to gather, everybody gathers their own families together, you know, to lie down for the night, they can't find Jesus. Mm. And so they're searching all over. Nobody knows where he is. He's not with anybody. And so they have to make the trip all the way back to Jerusalem. You can imagine, you know, the worry. Mm. And when they get there, they find him in the temple. And the Gospels, it's often we think of Jesus in the temple that he's teaching
the scribes.
But he's not teaching. He's listening mm-hmm. to the teachers. The mm-hmm. gospel says he's there listening to the teachers. Mm-hmm. This is very appropriate, you can see, for the mm-hmm. beginning of school. Mm-hmm. You know, I said, how many of you are 12 years old here? I'll raise your hand, mm-hmm. okay? So Jesus, when he was 12, where was he? He was in his father's house. Because when Mary and Joseph finally said, you know, why did you do this to us? Did you not know that, she said, that you and your father, we were worried about you? He says, but did you not know that I must be about my father's business? And she ponders this, and Jesus, and of course, this is also the beautiful part of the gospel for the children to hear, because then he goes back with them to Nazareth, and he grows in knowledge, in wisdom, in stature before God, his father, and before men. So it's, as you can see, a very appropriate gospel to use for the beginning of the school year, so they're listening, and also for the teachers, you know, that this is the teachers. Who is our supreme teacher? But we have one teacher. Like Jesus says, "Call no man father. You have but one father, and that's your father in heaven. Call no one teacher. You have but one teacher. That's your God, your father in heaven." Right. So I was saying, you know, as a priest, you know, I'm a priest. The teachers are teachers, but we're teaching, I'm a priest in the person, in the name of Jesus, right? So Jesus is the supreme teacher. He is the supreme priest, the high priest. But anyways, it's very easy for them mm-hmm. to grasp, mm-hmm. to understand the need to listen, and to be eager to know, mm-hmm. to be eager to know. What does God want for me to do? What's my vocation? You know, what must I do? And to know that we're here to grow in wisdom, in knowledge, and in stature. So we're treating the whole person. We want to treat the mind, the body, the soul, and the spirit. This is the beauty of the Catholic school, by the way. The Catholic school and the Catholic parishes, you're treating not only the body, because we have,
gym classes.
Gym classes. So there's all kinds of sports. Mm-hmm. Well, we've got even a league. We have
like
different
teams,
different schools come mm-hmm. for the league. They play basketball, they play soccer.
Volleyball.
So you're treating the body and, of course, the mind mm-hmm. because, you know, reading, writing, and arithmetic. I guess they still say that, right? Reading, mm-hmm. writing, arithmetic. Well, when I just went there, there were certainly some classes were writing, some classes were reading. I didn't see anybody doing mathematics, but I know that they do that as well. Mm-hmm. Of course, it's a no-brainer. But we can treat the soul. Mm-hmm. So we're also about treating the soul, the whole character of the person. So this idea that we want to train them to be good leaders, but leaders, you know, after the likeness of Christ, mm-hmm. right? the Ten Commandments, 2:10, 7, the two great commandments, the Ten Commandments, and the seven habits of learning. So anyway, I'm very happy that they're back. It's really it's good having them back. It's this is life, you know, and they're young. They're children.
Mm, yeah.
So it's good to have that, you know, that that life,
mm-hmm.
that life, that enthusiasm, because they are, you know, when you go over there, they're just, if you're a little bit down, not that I was, but if when you are.
Maybe we should send Tony there.
You know, and the kids like
Thank you for
Tony.
Your support. Yes, the kids love Tony. They do. Yes, they
Sunday.
Do.
My Sunday always brings me up because I have my nieces and nephews.
And they all fight. They want to all sit with Tony, yeah, to be around Tony.
Yeah.
Some people love me.
They do. You know,
some people.
A lot of people do, Tony.
I'm sorry, Tony. We love you, Tony.
Yes, yeah. You're very lovable.
Don't let your mother tell you different. Tony, don't let your mother tell you different.
Father said that. Mom, father said that, not me.
Everybody loves Tony, you know. But that would be a good thing to do, you know. So right. Anyway.
That's a good thing. I might just do that.
Yeah. All right, everybody, we'll take a break now, and we'll come back. Today's a feast of St. Augustine. Yes, it was a feast of his mother. I spoke about that with the children as well. And they knew, by the way, they knew who his mother was. Mm-hmm. They knew. I took
It rubs off, doesn't it, from the kids?
Yeah, it does. Isn't that what happened? I took his confessions, so I had the book. So you can teach all these different things. So I said, you know how old this book is? You know? And then, boy, I said, how old is the Bible? Since they start thinking, you know, okay, how old is this book? This is the Feast of St. Augustine. Well, they have no idea. But the one first grader, it was a first grader. They were there today. The first grader, he had glasses, so he was pretty smart. And he says, you know, I think that book is 1,000 years old. I don't know if you heard that.
I did.
But he said, I think it's 1,000 years old. I said, you know what? I said, you're close. It's 1,600 years old, 1,600.
Yeah.
So he was only 600 years off. Wow. That's not too bad.
Not
too bad.
It's pretty good.
Not for a first grader. That's pretty good.
It's pretty good.
Anyway. All right. We'll be right back. I'm Father Anthony. You're listening to Listen to Port of Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Dance with me. I want to be a partner. Can't you see?
St. Stanislaus Kostka Church. One church, many cultures, invites you to our fourth annual dinner dance on Friday, September 18th at the historic Willowbrook Ballroom, 8900 Archer Avenue in Willow Springs, Illinois. Dinner is served at 7 with dancing until midnight. Not only will there be dinner and dancing, there will also be various raffles, including an auction raffle, money raffle, and a silent raffle to support St. Stanislaus Kostka Church, with masses in English, Spanish, and Polish open 24 hours a day, as the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy is truly one church, many cultures. To get your tickets, visit sanctuaryofthedivinemercy.org. That's sanctuaryofthedivinemercy.org. Click on the events calendar for all you need to know to join us for our fourth annual dinner dance at the Willowbrook Ballroom, 7 p.m. Friday, September 18th. The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com. It's summertime and school is out. You are sharing time with your children and you're bonding as a family. But summertime, unfortunately, is turning into fall. And then it'll be back to school. But what school? You've worked hard to instill right reason and the values that God has established. And yet, you might be concerned not only with your child's school's quality of education, but by what they may be teaching, maybe undermining what you have worked so hard to instill. Perhaps St. Stanislaus Kostka School could be the positive answer to your questions. Academic excellence and Christ-centered values are the hallmarks of St. Stanislaus Kostka School. To find out what may be the best opportunity for your child, visit ststanschicago.org. That's ststanschicago.org. See the videos, see the students, and see what may be the best decision you can make for your child. Contact the school online or pick up the phone and call St. Stanislaus Kostka School to arrange for a visit at 773-278-4560. That's 773-278-4560.
Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for being with us. With that beautiful music, I don't want to talk about the problems of the world. We're not going to talk about the world's problems today. No way. No way. We're not going to. But some interesting facts about the Vatican, St. Peter's. This is, you'll find this interesting, I think. 11 surprising facts about the Vatican, about St. Peter's. The Vatican is, of course, everybody knows, I suspect, everybody knows that it is a country. Right. It is a country. It is not only a country, but it is the smallest country in the world, 109 acres. So about 8 Vatican states could fit within Central Park in New York City.
Wow.
8 Vatican states. Actually, when I go to Rome, I always walk around the whole country. Hey, isn't that interesting when I say, I walk around the whole country. Yeah. Have you ever walked around a country? I walk around the whole country of the Vatican State,
How
Vatican
long did it
City.
Take?
It took me just a couple of days. Just a couple of days. No, it took me an hour.
No, it would be.
Just takes an hour. Takes an hour. But it's impressive, really, because it's behind a wall. I mean, the square itself is like the opening. And then from there, it's behind this big wall. It's huge. The hall, the wall is huge. Just a fortress, really. It's like it's a fortress. I remember the first time I saw it, I was so impressed, because before we were coming down the side of the Vatican wall, and it was just I remember being on the bus. This is years and years ago, and it was being pointed out to us that this is Vatican City, and unbelievable. This is a medieval fortress. And then we went beyond the wall down to as you come up, Conciliazione, which is a street that goes into the Vatican. And when they turned the corner, it was breathtaking to see St. Peter's. Anyway, so it's the tiniest country in the world. I think most people knew that, right? You knew that, Geraldine.
I knew that.
The Pope is defended by the
Swiss Guard.
The Pontifical Swiss Guard. You know, and this has been since the 15th century.
Wow.
He's been defended by the Swiss Guard. Many of them died, by the way, in when was it? Should have done some back check on this, because they are soldiers. They're not just there for show. Mm-hmm. I mean, everything, unless it's something should happen, but it is, they perform ceremonial functions and all that, and everybody wants to take a picture of the Swiss Guard because they've got those very colorful
blue and yellow
uniforms.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Tony, do you remember, I know Father Coyce had mentioned one point, the designer of the Swiss Guard uniform. I forget who.
Versace.
No, it wasn't Versace. No,
I said something like that.
I don't know who it was.
Attention. I don't know.
So I have to check back.
Mm-hmm. So he's spoken about that.
Yes, he spoke a little bit about the history. Yeah.
So they wear the blue but on a feast day they wear the different colors.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It really is. It's impressive. You know what's really impressive is when you're you're in the square. You're going to the Vatican, to get into the St. Peter's, you have to go through the square, and then near the opening to the square, but not really because it's huge. I'll tell you about that in a moment. But you go through the guard, through the check, whatever it is, the body check,
mm-hmm.
And then you're under the what do they call it? the loggia, mm-hmm. the arms of the square. And when you come to the point where you turn to go up into St. Peter's, this is a long walk, but there's this beautiful look into the Vatican. You don't see the interior, but the stairs that go up, it's just absolutely impressive. And at the top of the stairs are the Swiss guards, and everybody takes a picture of that. And then you can see the corridors. But way up, what it reminds me of, as a child, because now, but when when Dorothy and the Scarecrow and the Lion went into the Land of Oz,
mm-hmm.
and they went finally got into the whatever it was where the wizard was,
right?
You know. Anyway, that's because when you're a kid and you see that, it was just wow, this is. That door opens, if you remember, in this long
yellow
corner, and everything is very impressive. But this is the Vatican, of course. It's not the Hollywood. This is for real. but it's very impressive, very impressive. So, but they are highly trained in security operations. They are soldiers in the Swiss Army. They are actually in the Swiss Army, the Swiss Guard. So the Pope has his own army.
Mm-hmm.
Michelangelo.
Michelangelo.
Yeah. Did what? The
he designed.
Oh, did he really? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Michelangelo.
It wasn't Versace.
No. Thanks for the clarification.
Versace is our time.
I don't know where
he's Italian, but that's it.
The World Series could be played in the space of St. Peter's Square.
Wow. Mm.
Wow.
The square itself. So St. Peter's Square was designed after the construction and papal consecration of the new basilica. So this is a third basilica, you know, built in the same spot, one above the other. And, the Baroque master was Bernini. So the square was built between 1656 and 1667. It's 100 feet long and 750 feet wide. Wrigley Field could fit within the square twice.
Mm.
The World Series could be played in St. Peter's Square. It can accommodate 250,000 people, the square. I think I read somewhere that it was the largest square in Europe. Could be wrong, but it's massive.
Wow.
It's massive. That's just the square,
mm-hmm.
St. Peter's Square, the piazza, the plaza de San Pedro. There was no image of the Blessed Virgin Mary in St. Peter's Square until, when do you think the first image of Our Lady was in the square? Now, she's in the Vatican, certainly in the St. Peter's and all over. I mean, the mm-hmm. images of Our Lady are everywhere. But in the square, visible, because you've got... At the top of the loge, you've got all the saints, you
mm-hmm.
know, but no image of the Blessed Virgin Mary until when, would you say?
I don't know.
1981.
Oh,
Pope
my.
Yeah.
Pope John Paul.
Saint John Paul.
Recent.
John Paul
Saint John
II.
Paul, yeah.
And it was, and it happened when John Paul II was shot in the square, and in his recuperation, as he was, because he associates his survival to the intervention of the Blessed mm-hmm. Virgin, and for reason, because mm-hmm. it was on the feast of Our Lady of Fatima,
yeah.
And that bullet, if you've ever read the, I mean, he should have been dead. Mm-hmm. That bullet seemed to zigzag around the major organs.
Because that was a professional, the guy that shot him.
Right, and it was right there.
Mm-hmm.
So. Anyway, so the Pope, he took the bullet. When they took the bullet out of him, he put it in the crown of Our Lady of Fatima.
And it fits perfectly.
Fatima. Yeah.
Yeah.
And as a result, he ordered a mosaic image of Mary to adorn the square. So it's the, and you'll see it. Everybody sees it when you go into the square. You can see up near, not too far from the papal apartments, the image, mosaic image of Our Lady holding the baby Jesus. The holy doors are opened only once every 25 years or for extraordinary jubilees. For instance, mm-hmm. they'll be open for the Jubilee Year of Mercy,
mm-hmm.
which is, I think, in December. I'm right. The doors will open on December 8th, Feast of the Immaculate Conception. So those are special doors as you're going into St. Peter's. It's just massive. It's the largest church in the world. I think now... Actually, there's a basilica that was built in the Ivory Coast. It is a little bit bigger than St. Peter's.
Really?
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I was reading that. I've read that every so often. But St. Peter's is St. Peter's. It's the center of Christendom. And but the doors, you've got these massive holy doors as you're going into the square. We can't even, unless you've been there, you can't imagine because we think of our own churches.
Mm-hmm.
Like St. Stan's is a big church, mm-hmm. but it's a teeny tiny church.
Compared
to St. Peter's, you could probably fit... in fact, when you're in the nave of St. Peter's, you can, as you're walking down the center, it'll show you that, you know, like Notre Dame will fit up to this point.
Mm-hmm.
So you get a sense of how big St. Peter's is. You take the whole of Notre Dame and you can put it inside St. Peter's. Notre Dame is a huge church. So the holy doors, but they're massive. They're massive. So watch for that, you know, when the Pope opens the holy doors for the Jubilee Year of Mercy, because you can download those. Just download holy doors at St. Peter's. They're massive. This is interesting. I didn't know this. The Pietà, is the only autographed work of Michelangelo.
Mm-hmm.
The only autographed work of Michelangelo. And why? Why do you think he autographed it?
I have no idea.
Because after the unveiling of the Pietà, which is the Madre Dolorosa, mm-hmm. the suffering mother holding the baby, not the baby, but the body of Jesus right. after mm-hmm. the crucifixion, after it had been unveiled, he overheard people attributing the work to other artists.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
And because he became enraged,
mm-hmm.
and he placed the inscription, Michelangelo, Buonarroti,
mm-hmm.
Florentine, maker. So he put mm-hmm. his signature is on the small ribbon across the statue's chest. Oh, I'm going to look for it the next time I go there.
Right.
Wow.
And then later, however, he returned and was filled with remorse over this display of pride.
Mm-hmm.
And so he counter his vanity, he never signatured any work, any of his works. He remained faithful to that vow. So the only work autographed by Michelangelo was the Pietà.
Mm.
The Super Bowl could be played in the nave of the church.
Mm.
The Super Bowl.
Wow.
The nave means boat, right?
Mm.
The nave is the center, the part where the people are during the worship of the Mass. That would be the nave. That's apart from the sanctuary.
Huge.
So the nave alone comes, from the word for ship, right?
Because
mm-hmm. the ship, the church is a ship. And in a sense, it's an image of the church. And so it's the central aisle of the church. So anyway, that's interesting.
Hmm.
But the whole Super Bowl could be played in the nave of St. Peter's.
Wow.
The altar of St. Sebastian is the resting place of St. Pope John Paul II.
Huh.
It's very beautiful, by the way. He was down below, and I'm trying to think, who did they move? Because they moved John the 23rd, and his body was incorrupt. He's now in the nave of St. Peter's. It's very impressive. You see his body because he's in a glass coffin. That's Pope John the 23rd, the saint. He's a saint, mm-hmm. Saint Pope John the 23rd. But who was in his? Was he in? Maybe John the 23rd was where Pope John Paul II is. Anyway, somebody was removed to make room for John Paul II. And that's in the church of the altar of St. Sebastian. And I think it's right, it's either right beside the Pietà or just a chapel, because there's all these side chapels. So it might be, there might be a chapel between the Pietà and the chapel of St. Sebastian. And that's as you go into St. Peter's is to the right. But it's very beautiful, very beautiful. This is interesting too. The feet. There's a beautiful statue of Saint Peter,
mm-hmm.
right? And the feet of Saint Peter's statue, it's been worn down, and it's interesting. You know why? Because now this is so. We're talking 500 years. It's probably been there, and it's because when people go by it, you know they caress
mm-hmm. yes.
the foot.
Yeah.
So especially the right foot, but both the feet are what you can see. It's really mm-hmm. quite impressive mm-hmm. that they're worn down to nothing, and almost providential because when they opened up the tomb of St. Peter, of course his whole body was there, his bones, but no feet,
oh.
because he was crucified upside down,
right.
and they cut him at the feet.
Yes,
he wasn't buried with his feet. So
interesting.
the space shuttle could fit within the area of the dome. Bernini's dome, no, Bernini's baldacchino.
Right.
But the Dome of St. Peter, it's massive. It is massive. And you can actually go up, you know, you can take the tour, you know, walk those steps all the way to the top of the dome. And as you're walking in the dome, the wall is leaning over you, you know. But it's very, if you're claustrophobic, you don't want to do this. So you can see even from, you can barely see, you can barely make it out. You wouldn't know it until somebody points it out, but you look at from the outside at the dome if you're in the square and you can see the people walking around, but it's just barely, you almost need binoculars. So the space shuttle would fit in the area of the dome. The dome, let's see. So the Dome of St. Peter's is more than 100 feet higher than the U.S. Capitol in Washington, D.C. It's a little bit up for your information. And then finally, the basilica, I think I mentioned this just a few weeks ago, the basilica is built on the very bones of St. Peter. That is impressive, I have to tell you, really, because you are rock, and upon this rock I will build my church, Jesus said to Peter. And after he was crucified, he was, I don't know if he was actually crucified in the Circus of Nero, I think because Nero's circus was just to the side of the Vatican Hill. The Vatican Hill was a cemetery. And Nero, you say Nero's circus. What are they, like the gladiators and all that? Because you had the Circo Massimo over near the Colosseum. But alongside the Vatican Hill, the cemetery, was the Nero's circus. And that's where Peter was crucified. He was crucified upside down, and he was buried in the cemetery in the Vatican, on the Vatican Hill, in the cemetery. So when Constantine was converted to Christianity, he had a basilica built over the tomb of St. Peter. So for all these years, the church has known that the Vatican, or the St. Peter's, was built over the tomb of St. Peter. And they had an idea as to where the body was. And again, we're talking three different basilicas built one on top of the other over the 2,000 years, or less than 2,000 years, because I think, what was it, in the 5th century, perhaps, the basilica was built, the first basilica. The present one was built in the 15th to the 16th century. But in any case, it was only in the 1950s, or 1968, I'm sorry, that they were actually making room for no, it was before that, because they were making room for the burial of Pope Pius the 12th in the catacombs, because you got under the basilica, or under the nave of the church, you've got the catacombs, or the place where all the popes are. You can see all the what do they call this?
Sarcophagus.
Sarcophagus of the popes. Not all of them, but most of them are down there. So you can go down there and walk through there. And there's chapels all over the place. It's really, really impressive. In the morning, around 7 o'clock, everybody's celebrating Mass. Mm-hmm. I've had many Masses down there in different chapels. I don't know how many chapels are, but you got the chapels, and I think the tombs of the popes might be underneath or around the side there. But in some of those, they're actually in those chapels as well. In any case, when they were making room for preparing for the death and the burial of Pope Pius the 12th, as they were digging, they went into, they discovered the catacombs that were beneath all that. And so they began to do excavations, and they found the tomb of St. Peter. And it had Petrus. And so it was Pope Paul VI who had the bones studied. They didn't tell the forensic people or whatever they just sent the bones for study. And as they could, you know, with all this determine, he was about 58 years old, and there were no feet. And all this, and so it was a male. But it was, so the tomb, the actual tomb of St. Peter is directly under the altar of sacrifice, directly under the baldacchino, directly under the dome, and at the top of the dome is a an image of the Holy Spirit. It's just really impressive, very, very impressive. And when you go down there, and it's not advertised because it's a very small area, so you have to go in from a from around the back of the Vatican or back of St. Peter's, and there's you can they take only small groups at a time, and so they don't advertise it because it would just be impossible to accommodate all the pilgrims. You're talking thousands and thousands of people every day that are passing through the Basilica of St. Peter. So, but when you go down there, I was down there twice. It is, it's just impressive. It's eerie. It's impressive, and it just makes you think about the authenticity of this faith that we embrace and the historicity and the durability of the church. And I often think, you know, a non-Catholic, what would they think? You know, it has to make you wonder, to question, don't you think? It's really, 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 really impressive, really beautiful. Yeah. All right, anyway, so that's just some tidbits on St. Peter. So we'll take a break and we shall be right back on this, the Feast of St. Augustine. I'm Father Anthony. You're listening to Listener Supported Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
You've heard us say that Winds of Change is listener supported. That means you help us stay on the air with your dollars and your prayers. And we are asking for that help now. Please take a moment and go to our website, windsofchangeshow.com. That's windsofchangeshow.com. On the upper right-hand side of the page, there is a link, Support Winds of Change Show. Click on that link and donate securely with any major credit card. With your help, Winds of Change will continue to bring you the truth. The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
The best candidate for marriage is the very person who would be a good candidate for monasticism. And the best candidate for monasticism would be the very person who would be a good candidate for marriage. I'm Father Thomas J. Loy with a Theology of the Body moment for the Tabor Life Institute. Celibacy and marriage are not opposed to each other. They're actually two sides of the same coin. Marriage and celibacy are both choices to love, to make a gift of self, to live spousally. Happy marriages are those which have the element of the monastic in them, prayer, discipline, dying to self, and a sense of belonging ultimately to God. A celibate is happiest when he or she lives their celibacy spousally, making a gift of self to God and to others. The married couple reminds the celibate of the spousal dimension of his or her celibacy. The celibate reminds the married couple of the sacramental nature of their marriage. To find out more about the theology of the body, visit taborlife.org. Taborlife.org.
Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for being with us as we wrap up the hour. It's hard to believe, you know, this has gone fast on this day, but today's a feast of St. Augustine. You know, he said, what's he most famous for saying? I think people quote this all the time. I certainly think about it all the time. And what does he say?
I will not rest until I rest in thee.
Will not rest until I rest in thee. And he says that, you know, yet if the world grows old, Christ is perpetually young. Hence the invitation, do not refuse to be rejuvenated, united to Christ, even in the old world. He tells you, do not fear, your youth will be renewed like that of an eagle. Thus the Christian must not lose heart, even in difficult situations, but rather he must spare no effort to help those in need. This is the, and this is absolutely, when we're speaking about St. Peter's and about the historicity, the durability and the historicity, and the you were just mentioned, Christine, during the break that the church is alive. Now, when you're there, you can see the living church, the universality of the church, the history, actually all these things, right? You know, as I'm talking, I'm thinking about this. So, the St. Peter's, the Vatican, you've got this unbelievable sense of the historicity as you go through the museums and all that, you know, and everything is, you know, so ancient, so old, but ever so new because you've got the vibrancy of the church's universality represented in the pilgrims that come. And so it's anytime there's a papal mass, anytime there's an event, or the address to the world that the Pope makes on Christmas Day or on at Easter time, you've got, or every Sunday for the Angelus, or every Wednesday for the audience, that plaza is filled with people from all over the world. And it's impressive to see all the flags from all over the world. And then, of course, everything is spoken in all the different languages. It really is. You get this sense of, wow, we're part of this mystery. This is the mystical body of Christ, the historicity. You've got the images of the saints, the statues of all those saints, which, by the way, in fact, Jerry, I think you were with us. We were staying at St. Paul.
Yes.
And just on the balcony, this was a hotel that was right alongside St. Peter's. And on the balcony, you were actually at the level of the statues of the saints that are above the loggia, the square. And it's beautiful, but the loggia, because the arms, this is Bernini did this, but he built the square as arms that are open to the world, you know, just to say to open the world. Or you think of from this little seed, this little mustard seed, this great big bush would grow forth and be, and all the birds would find rest in the branches of this this bush.
And even too, Father, you're talking about how it's open to the world from the top. It sort of looks like a keyhole too.
That's right. I never thought about it. That's right. And that was probably part of the design as well. You know, so I give you the keys. Peter was given the keys, right? What you bind on earth will be bound in heaven. What you loosed on earth will be loosed in heaven. That's an interesting point. I have to look into that because you're absolutely right. But it's just so impressive. It's so impressive. Historicity, durability, the vibrancy, ever so young, ever ancient, ever so young, right?
Forever young.
Ever young.
Jesus.
The fountain of youth, you know. And this is the good news for all of us, you know. Geraldine, this is very, very good news for you.
There's hope. No,
because
there's hope.
Even though we get old and the body breaks down, you know, the spirit gets young. Is always forever young. And this is why we want to keep life in Christ. Because he's always new. It's always a new day. Anyway, we're getting running out of time here, but I want to share from the Confessions of St. Augustine, because they're so beautiful. He's talking about his own conversion experience. He says, "Urged to reflect upon myself, I entered under your guidance into the inmost depth of my soul. I was able to do so because you were my helper," he's speaking to God. "On entering into myself, I saw, as it were, with the eye of the soul, what was beyond the eye of the soul, beyond my spirit, your immutable light." And he says it was not the ordinary light perceptible to the flesh, nor was it merely something of greater magnitude, but still essentially akin, shining more clearly and diffusing itself everywhere by its intensity. No, it was something entirely distinct, as he's trying to describe the light of God, something altogether different from all these things. And it did not rest above my head as oil on the surface of water, nor was it above me as heaven is above the earth. This light was above me because it had made me. It was below. I was below it because I was created by it. He who has come to know the truth knows this light, knows what I'm talking about. He says, O eternal truth, true love and beloved eternity, you are my God. To you do I sigh day and night. When I first came to know you, you drew me to yourself so that I might see that there were things for me to see, but that I myself was not yet ready to see them. Meanwhile, you overcame the weakness of my vision, sending forth most strongly the beams of your light, and I trembled at once with love and dread. I learned that I was in a region unlike yours and far distant from you, and I thought I heard your voice from on high. I am the food of grown men. Grow then, and you will feed on me. Nor will you change me into yourself like bodily food, but you will be changed into me. I sought a way to gain the strength which I needed to enjoy you, but I did not find it until I embraced the mediator between God and man, the man Christ Jesus, who is, above all, God blessed forever. He was calling me and saying, I am the way of truth. I am the life. He was offering the food which I lacked the strength to take, the food he had mingled with our flesh. For the word became flesh, that your wisdom, by which you created all things, might provide milk for us children. Late have I loved you. Because you remember, he had been searching, mm-hmm. and he had rejected God. He was trying to go anywhere but to God. His mother, of course, the dear mother, suffered and prayed 30 years for his conversion. And so now, he says, late have I loved you. Oh, beauty ever ancient. And he was really in his 30s, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't old. Late have I loved you. Oh, beauty ever ancient, ever new. Late have I loved you. You were within me, but I was outside. And it was there that I searched for you. In my unloveliness, I plunged into the lovely things which you created. You were with me, but I was not with you. Created things kept me from you, yet if they had not been in you, they would not have been at all. You called, you shouted, and you broke through my deafness. You flashed, you shone, and you dispelled my blindness. You breathed your fragrance on me. I drew in breath, and now I pant for you. I have tasted you. Now I hunger and thirst for more. You touched me, and I burn for your peace. This is a beautiful, beautiful word to Saint Augustine.
Yeah.
But I think the beauty is, you know, and I go back to this, you know, Christ is ever new. This is where we have to put our faith and our hope and our trust in what is known, what we've known for all. Really, this is why I think on Monday I'm going to talk about the Ten Commandments for Protestants considering Catholicism. I was reading that this morning. Very beautiful. But because you're talking about the uniqueness of Catholicism, the Catholic Church. Remember, Monica said and at the time, there was only the Catholic Church. It was only, mm-hmm. people say, well, it was a Christian. Well, it was already called Catholic.
Yeah.
And she said, I prayed. She said, I can die now in peace because I prayed, I suffered for your conversion, that you convert, that you become a Catholic, a Christian. And now that you've done so, I can die in peace. I don't know why the Lord is keeping me here. I'm ready to go. But the beauty is this mystery. So, as you know, we even looked at it and we said the tensions, the conflict, the dialogue, the, you know, what's going to happen. You know, we got the synod coming up in October and, you know, we're in this, you know, but the world is what it is. The church is what it is. You've got the mystical body, we in the battle, but the church in heaven that is ever interceding, praying for us, and Christ there and Christ here among us, with us, always renewing, always reforming, always calling us back to our true identity, and always, always ensuring for himself a little flock that suffers the faith, that keeps the faith, that intercedes. And my hope is this is who we are. This is who we are. Anyway, everybody, thanks for being with us. Have a really wonderful weekend. Because it's kind of the last of the summer, right? We got two more this weekend and then the next weekend, but the last in August. So thanks for being with us. Almighty God bless you, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit.
Amen.
Ciao.
It's time to be stirred. The time is now.